Up to now, we spoke about logismi, thoughts, and, you know, realize that a thought or a logismos is something different than a sin. A sin is also something different than a passion. And the church fathers have studied human nature for many, many years. That's why they went out into the desert, not only to fight the devil, but also to find out about themselves. Because sometimes in the world we say, you know what, if it wasn't for the other people, you know, if it wasn't for my wife, my husband, this, that, you know, I would be fine. You know, I lose my temper because of this and this and this. And then you're all by yourself. Nobody's around you. You know, you walk in and, you know, some kind of a branch trips you up and you go crazy. All by yourself. So, you know, you can't really blame it on other people all the time. You know, these passions eventually, if we don't practice this discipline, they will find their way inside of us. And if we have questions like, how come some of these children, like, say, Nicholas, even at the age of 2-3 years old, they were fasting, and how some of these saints, you know, even from the time they were 8-9 years old, you know, they were able to do prostrations, do the Jesus prayer, and Saint Nicodemus of Holy Mountain, from the time he was very, very young, you know, all they thought about was God, because they had very, very holy parents. And just like the parents will give some material inheritance to the children, also the parents and the foreparents, you know, they give spiritual inheritance to the children. No, we're not responsible for the sins of our fathers. However, because of their lifestyle and because of their tendencies, we are prone to their tendencies. So, if a child is conceived with prayer, if a child is conceived with studying the lives of the saints, if a child is conceived in a holy manner and not out of drunkenness and not out of licentiousness, then this child, we're to the point now, we're talking about embryonic psychology, even at the age of 7 days old, you know, that child begins to get signals if the parents want the child or not. So the child knows, and all this rebellion that we see in children is the result of the unholiness of us parents. So by saying these things, for some of us who did not necessarily live this lifestyle all our lives, we have great hope for our children, for these young ones. We're going to come up, and maybe they will get some of these passions, but to a much lesser degree, because they will have the medicine of the church to help them along. So the church fathers, in studying human nature, they saw three mega passions, and this is from John Cassian the Roman, who was a student of St. John the Chrysostom. He settled in Sicily later on, and he introduced organized monasticism in southern Italy and Sicily. He talks about the three major mega passions that we talked about yesterday, philidonia, philargyria, and philodoxia. Philos in Greek means to love, the first one being the love of pleasure, the second, the love of material goods, the attachment to material goods, and the third, to be attached and starved for people's attention, to want to be famous and make a name for ourselves. And all these passions will be introduced to every teenager, even. They are the same temptations that, you know, the devil tried to tempt Christ with. So far we talked about Lo Yizni coming in, and that we're not responsible at the beginning stages. We are not responsible at the initial assault when the thought comes. However, if we don't do these different exercises that we talked about, if we don't exercise ignorance or substitutional thought or prayer or debate, and of course if we're not even in knowledge of these things, if we're totally ignorant of all this warfare, then the natural thing, the unnatural thing, because passions are very unnatural, the unnatural thing to do is to do exactly what we see in our everyday lives, to sin constantly with no remorse. So we have stages of sin. And St. John of Damascus tells us, and I'm trying to back this up with different spiritual fathers, the prosvoli, or initial attack, or the assault state, according to St. John of Damascus, you know, this is not a sin, and it is beyond our control. That's what we mean when we say we're not responsible. There's nothing we can do to stop it. There's nothing, just like dreams. There's nothing we can do to stop dreams. We can try that discipline that we talk about in that question. But we are not responsible for what kind of dreams we have. We're not sinning at that point. If we have a very disturbing dream, even though it's not a sin, it's good to discuss it. If it disturbs us and we lose our peace, because the ultimate work of the devil is to disturb us, to take that peace of Christ outside of us, and then we cannot pray, we cannot go about our, you know, we are very upset, and, you know, the devil works very well, you know, when we are confused, upset, and desperate. So it is beyond our control to have an initial attack. For instance, you know, we have a nose. We go outside and we smell the smell of barbecue. Nice steak for our neighbor, you know, is cooking on any day. I mean, during Lent, it's not a sin. Just because you smelled it, you make the thought, oh, wow, steak. If you stop at that point, okay, it's not a problem. But people who are hypersensitive, they think that, oh, wow, I desire steak. I'm dead. You know, that's not the case. You know, smelled it. Just, again, we chase it away. So after this initial assault state, if we don't stop the logismo, this thought, in the beginning state, then we start a dialogue. That's the second step. We begin to entertain the idea. The devil in the garden approaches Eve. He was very careful. He isolated her from Adam. Adam is not anywhere near her at this point. You know, he divided him. So he appears to Eve, and he makes the initial assault. First of all, he doesn't even know anything. He does not know the thoughts. He doesn't know everything. He was watching very carefully, though. He watches our actions. As Father Joseph told me, it's very, very good. You know, he watches how we act. He watches our faces, how we respond to things. And he sees. So he was most likely watching that Eve was going around in the tree and looking at it. And then she would walk away. And he watched them eat from the other fruits. So he didn't know exactly what was going on. But he's very conniving. And because he didn't know, he threw, and this is done very much in sales, okay? You know, it's a technique. It's called, you know, sending out feelers. You want to feel what, you know, how close you are to the sale, okay? So he throws a question at her, not because he knew this. He saw them eat, but he threw a very cunning question. Is it true that God told you not to eat from any of the trees in the garden? Okay. So now he's fishing. He's doing this to fish Eve in. And instead of Eve saying, and this is from Simeon, the New Theologian, at this point, she should have thought, oh, wait a second, why are you speaking? You are a serpent. No other animal speaks. Why should I speak to you? Nothing like that. She just kind of fell for it. And then she answers, no, God told us not to eat from this tree because we will die. And now we have this dialogue. And whenever we get in dialogue with the devil, we will most likely not win, because he will mix all kinds of lies with, you know, the thoughts. You know, he's very, very cunning. She should have said, now wait a second. And then he throws, no. Now at this point, he throws an attack, an accusation against God. No, he told you this because if you eat, you'll become gods. And this idea of becoming God without God was very, very entertaining to Eve. This was pleasing to her. So now she's beginning to interact with this thought. But at this point, there's no sin. We have no sin at the initial level, but we still have no sin at the interaction or dialogue level. There's no sin committed. It's temptation, but it's not a sin. At this point, and, you know, someone during the break told me that, you know, about dispensationalism as a different God of the Old Testament and a different God in the New Testament. And of course, we all know that it's the same loving God. God did not chase Adam and Eve out of the garden. As a matter of fact, he treated them with the utmost tender, loving care as a true father in the garden. So at this point, if Eve would have said, now wait a second, what you're telling me, you know, I need to discuss it. I have a husband. I have someone else here. You know, let me discuss this. She did not seek spiritual direction. So she acted on her own. And, of course, you know the result. So she began, she believed the serpent. So even at the second level, at the level of interaction, when we begin to, you know, entertain the thought, should I or shouldn't I? Should I take it or not? Should I do this or not? We have this yes, no, this dialogue. But sometimes this can be pleasurable dialogue. We begin to have pleasure in this dialogue. We like the idea. We like the idea, especially when we get compliments. And at that point, we begin to, we're not sinning yet, but these compliments throw the bait. So at this point, if again we play volleyball, Father Athanasius Mytilineos says, the thought comes, you just hit it right back, out. If you catch it, it's foul. You don't catch it, you just hit it right out. Okay. David didn't do that when he saw Bathsheba bathing, and he got him into a lot of trouble. You know, it is best once again to stop, if we have the strength and the discipline and the grace of God, to stop these thoughts at the beginning, at the initial assault state, or even at the interaction state. After the interaction state, if the logismon is persistent and we don't manage to stop it, then we have the level of consent. Now, the thought sounds feasible to the soul, sounds exciting, and, you know, we find all kinds of reasons why we should do this. And here we have the embryonic developmental state of sin. Now, sin is beginning to take flesh and bones. In other words, we decided that we're going to do this. Sounds good. Eve, at this point, puts her hand out. No, she didn't get it yet, but she decided that what the devil is telling her is more true than what God is saying. Now, at the level of consent, there's a number of factors that God put in our nature to stop us from doing these actions. At the level of consent, when we are ready to do something, you know, there's the fear, if you want to go rob a bank, for instance, for somebody, there's the fear of getting caught. It's the, you know, sometimes the conscience comes in. The loss of reputation, not help sometimes. Punishment is also a deterrent. There's a number of reasons, you know, that can stop somebody from doing the sin. And St. John in the latter states that I saw some thieves that they were ready to go steal. And they were not afraid of anybody, or not afraid of God, not afraid of anybody else, but there were some big dogs inside the yard. So they were afraid of the dogs, and that's good. At least something stopped them from doing the sin. So at this point, at the state of consent, now a sin is being committed in the heart. At this point, we begin to have responsibility. And at this point, Christ says, if you see a woman and you desire her in your heart, you already have committed adultery, and this has been done in your heart. So a red flag goes up at this consent level. But again, the actual sin is not committed. And it's not a small thing. Because, yes, it is not the same to commit adultery in your heart and do the act. You know, there was a debate between some of the great ascetic circles of St. John the Chrysostom. They were constantly just challenging the Holy Father that, no, it's a sin, and whether, you know, if you desire something, you might as well go ahead and do it because the sin is done. Doesn't matter. Whether you desire it in your heart or whether you do the sin, it's the same thing. And St. John was trying to tell him that it's not the same thing. There's a big difference. You know, there's responsibility there. You know, it's a big difference between wanting to kill somebody, planning it, and pulling the trigger. It's a huge difference. They're both sinful states, but the one is at a very, very embryonic state, and the other is very difficult to deal with. And St. Basil says, you know, I never knew a woman, and yet I'm not a virgin. You know, so even a sin that is committed in our heart at the state of consent, it is a sinful thought at this point. And Christ does this so he can eliminate the conception of sin. It's very important to stop sin at the conception level. Once it begins to grow, as we'll see, it becomes very difficult. And then, you know, when we're at this level of consent, again, fear comes in. You know, if I sin, what would happen? Will God forgive me? Or if he doesn't forgive me? You know, and many times, just the idea of having to go to confess a sin is a deterrent. It's a deterrent. You have the thought, how am I going to tell this to my spiritual father? I better not do it. Because we don't want to displease him, you know. Sometimes, you know, I do some things in my dreams, you know, something, whatever. And, oh, no, I have to go tell my spiritual father. And then I wake up and, oh, what a relief. So the demons are experienced fighters, and they fight us. They go to battle every day, every month of the year. So if we let the thought come to the state of consent, then the outcome is very uncertain. You know, it's we see this every day when we entertain fleshly romantic thoughts. And this is not only for teenagers. Let's not think that this applies to teenagers only. You know, this generation of ours, we have at the age of 70, 75 years old, someone was visiting after his wife died, after a few months. He was visiting Father Paisios to bless him so he could have a Christian family. He wanted to make another family at that age, you know. So, and this is after watching television constantly for like months and months and months. So very spiritual man. But after his wife died, he became very depressed. He didn't fight properly. And he began to watch all kinds of programming. And finally, you know, he just... So this is, you know, the demon of fornication can follow us, you know, until we close our eyes. We have to be very careful at all times. And a lot of young kids, you know, they ask, well, we're not going to do anything. You know, we're just friends, you know. And they ask that, can we have a girlfriend? And St. Nicodemus answers this very beautifully. You know, he says, you know, right now, this is how you feel, but take a wet sponge. Take a sponge, you know, a nice sea sponge that can hold like 4 pounds of water, you know, 5 pounds of water, and just soak it. And then you put it right next to the fire, right here. Nothing's going to happen to it. But after an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 1 day, 3 days, eventually the water is going to evaporate. And now the sponge will start to get very, very hot. And then eventually, poof, goes up in flames. Because this is how it happens. Nobody wants to sin, but being that we don't know our human nature and know this warfare, we have so many victims today. But we let our guard down because we like attention, and then we find ourselves in this ring, and now this fight is very, very difficult when we fight at the stage of consent. Again, it's very easy to push that fly away. But now when it becomes a snake, as I said yesterday, and it's sitting on you, or You know, the sin, according to the elders, they use a very mythical, you know, very fictitious animal that they make up. They call it an ant lion. They say that in the beginning, at the initial attack, the thought is like a little fly, a little ant. You just go like that and it's gone. But after you let it grow, it develops a body. This fictitious, this head of an ant, now it develops a huge body of a lion. And then you can no longer fight this. At this point, a great blow happens to the noose. The noose that was fighting up to this point, now the noose loses control. And desire takes over. The emotional part of the soul takes over. The noose is supposed to guide the heart, to be the leader. But after this, the noose is knocked out. And now we turn into putty, as the world tells us. Years ago, I had a business transaction with some Indian people, and they happened to be Muslims. And while I was visiting there, I was shaking hands, and then I went to shake, you know, the lady's hand. And she just took it back, and she says, you know, she was very strict. She says, you know, we don't shake hands with men. And at that point, I was a little kind of, you know, offended, I guess. But according to St. Nicodemus of Holy Mountain, and it is in this sense, and don't misconstrue this, that Father Philotheos Zervakos was saying that some of our pious Muslims are, you know, practicing a much better discipline than most of our Western Christians. And the Christians that don't do, and not just Western, Eastern Christians who don't have this discipline, and Orthodox who don't have this discipline. Our forefathers, when they danced, they wouldn't touch each other. And I know, it's like, oh, you know, that sounds... Because St. Nicodemus says, the most torturous sense is the sense of touch. The sense of touch. And, you know, when they danced, they would have handkerchiefs, and they would dance, you know, the ethnic dances without touching each other because they were in tune of this tradition. They didn't know much theology, but they didn't have any divorces, you see. But today, all these things, you know, we have psychologists today. We have theologian psychologists, and some of them also teach groups like this, and one of them was stating a few years ago that, look, today we have more psychological knowledge than Christ. Imagine that. I think he left his theology books behind for about 20 years. I think he just made a simple mistake. I'm sure he does not believe that. Sometimes you speak, you can make a mistake. You know, it's normal. And heresy is not to say something wrong. I can say something wrong, and I'm not in heresy. As long as when Father Joseph comes up and tells me, Constantine, this was wrong. You said it wrong. And I say, I'm sorry, I will change it. And this is what the church did to Arius. The church gave Arius years. The same thing with Nestorius. Gave him years to repent. Brother in Christ, please reconsider. Brother Bishop, they treated him with utmost love. But heresy is, you know, after being corrected, to keep your own will. So once again, today we see in our Orthodox liturgies, and I mentioned that simple people would not even touch themselves, you know, in a dance situation, a very, very, let's say, worldly situation. But today we see couples rubbing each other's back in church, during liturgy, during sermons, holding hands in church, holding hands in liturgy. These movements were unknown to the people that produced saints. And I'm saying, I do understand that, you know, a lot of people come in as converts and we say these things in love. And that's why the church had the women on the one side, the men on the other side, for reasons like that, because they were very much in tune of guarding their senses constantly. It becomes very, very difficult when somebody comes next to you and eats garlic every time, and they love to sit next to you in church. And you have the temptation, now, should I tell him not to sit here or not? You know, and this goes on and on and on and on. And you have to fight these different temptations when we're in church. One time in our church back home, we have these 5-6 beautiful women, blessed women, you know, the yayas, the older ones. And they just speak very loudly during liturgy, you know, like it's a cafenio, you know, like, and it just, and, you know, the logismo was telling me to turn around and say, please. But I fought this for weeks, you know, just don't say anything, let the priest tell them. Why? you know, all of a sudden want to correct. But this is an opportunity to struggle and fight. You know, these are opportunities if we use them properly. What made Porphyrios very holy in Athens, they put him as a chaplain to Polyclinic. It's like a hospital that treats a lot of people. So he was there. Nobody knew him. He was an unknown. Very holy. Came from a holy mountain because of certain diseases. And every time during liturgy across the street, there was a stereo shop, and he would blast his Greek records very loud every Sunday morning. Difficult. He went out and he said, would you please, you know, just keep it low because I have divine liturgy. No, listen, I got to make a living, okay? You know, this is how I make a living. I will not. He had thoughts of leaving. You know, he says, how can I do this? I can't concentrate. He prayed so hard for God to help him with this. And this helped him to concentrate so much that he developed extremely strong prayer. His prayer had to be stronger than these sounds outside. You see. So these things are opportunities sometimes, and we can use them. So we fall when we allow these stages to progress. It becomes more and more dangerous at every state. Again, at the first state of assault, it's very easy to just, whatever thought comes, to wipe it away. After the state of consent, when in our mind we accept it, we accepted this idea, we accepted the thought, it sounds good, everybody's doing it, why not? Now we have the action. And now sin is totally completed. We lost the battle, and we now complete the sin. Now, if things would stop at this point, it would be no problem. Unfortunately, this is just the beginning, because now the noose is enslaved, and it is the soul that sins first, and now the body also gets used to the pleasure, to the idea of pleasure. And now, where it may have taken 1 day, 2 weeks, 1 month, 3 months to come to the action of this sin, now, after we do it one time, the second time will be much easier. And much easier. And much easier, to the point where now all these stages are gone. The time the thought comes, boom, we're at the action. You see? Because we took out the fear, the struggle, the conscience, that's all gone away. And now we have the repetition of sin. We start with a cigarette. Oh, I just smoke socially. We smoke socially. It'd be cool. Right? You know, I will not get hooked. I'm just going to try it one time. I'm only going to do it one time, a few times, you know. And then, as our defense system falls apart, then we do it again and again and again. We have this repetition. And at this point, we become captives to these habits, which are very difficult to break. And this is very true for any kind of addiction, whether it's flesh addiction, drug, alcohol, greed, whatever. It's the same procedure. The mind is enslaved and controlled now by this repetitious sin that now becomes a passion. So what's the difference between a thought? A thought is the beginning intrusion. If we allow it to germinate, if we allow it to continue, then it goes through these stages of dialogo or dialogue, and then consent, syngatathesis in Greek, and then sin, which is also captivity of the nous. And then we have the repetition, and now we become people of passions. At this point, we have two different people, two different categories. After years of doing these things, the man realizes that he's captive. There's two categories. There's the man who loves his passion, and he cannot do without it. Not only that, he doesn't want to live without it. He says, this life would be meaningless if I didn't have this. And he does not feel that he's doing anything wrong. I have an electrician who's a coke addict. Now I might give him this tape anyway, because I've been telling him for years. He thinks he's not doing anything wrong. He's not hurting anybody. For 40 years, the poor thing, you know, he lost his wife, lost everything. He has three beautiful children, and he's almost 60 years old, and he does not hurt anybody. He says, you know, I have a fault, you know, and he proclaims himself to be a Christian who's going to heaven, you know. And he says, I'm saved, you know, this is, I don't hurt anybody. So a person like this is almost at the level of blaspheming the Holy Spirit. He does not want to change. Remember when Paisios was praying for the devil? And he says, I don't need to repent. I know better. It's God who's at fault. Why don't we say, God made me like this? We're blaspheming. It's different to say that somehow, I don't know how it happened, you know, I developed this passion of homosexuality. Then there's hope. There's hope. But when science and all the vehicles of the Antichrist come to help you along to hell and tell you that you were made like this, you are condemned from this life. Because when you believe that there's nothing wrong with you, you know, then you will not seek repentance. So we have the first category, the man who loves his passion and he feels that this is his nature. And St. Maximus the Confessor says that passions are not part of our nature. You know, they are not created by God. They are foreign to the soul. They are foreign substances that we entertain and we brought in ourselves. So that's the first category. The second category is the man who does not love his passion. He hates his life, but he cannot free himself. The passion enslaves the heart. And at this point, this man wakes up. And I was, rest his soul, this man who was a gambler, he would gamble in these poker machines, thousands of dollars. You know, he would walk. He wouldn't even take a bus just to save some money. So he would come to the, but after he would do it, he would curse, you know, the day that he was born, and he would say that this is demonic work, this is horrible. You know, he knew that he was someone enslaved. He knew it. He knew that this was evil. And God gave him an opportunity to get sick at the end of his life. But again, when we know that these passions, you know, are sinful, then we have an opportunity. So knowing all this, we must begin to fight at the assault state, because later on it becomes very, very difficult. When we make our children very egotistical by giving them everything from the beginning, whatever you want, have this, have that. No, I don't want to fast. Okay, you don't want to fast? Well, that's what we have. That's what we have in the refrigerator. There's no meat in our home, not for the next 40 days. If they're teenagers, they might go outside and eat if they're rebelling. But they will not eat in our home. They will not have it. In this home, we fast. We also must mention that it is much easier for younger people to work on virtues, because for a lot of us, we waited until a little bit older and these passions take roots. And, you know, sometimes we have this delusion that because we cannot do certain things, our children will not be able to do them either. You know, we think that, you know, and believe me, when I say this, sometimes when we talk about self-control in the marriage, and I know it's a subject that doesn't come up very often. You know, one time I was teaching a youth group, like a yacht group in church, and it was very comical, you know. We were teaching about fasting. And, you know, a young teenager, you know, leaned over. They were kind of next to me. And she goes, "Do you know what I heard? You want to know what I heard? That this couple, they don't have any relations during Lent? Can you believe that?" And now she's ready to get married, and I've reminded her. was, you know, I remember what you said, you know. But you know, she understands very well. But we think that if we say these things, we're going to chase our young people away from the church. Do you know want to know the truth? It's the parents that rebel more when we say these things. Because now, when we are older, we are brittle. We are brittle. And we cannot stretch and bend. It's like a tree. When the tree is very small, the wind, you know, will swing it around a little bit. You can fashion it. But once the tree becomes very, very brittle, it's very difficult. So, yes, some of these things we may have not done ourselves. And we will insist in love for our children to practice these things. And if we're sincere teachers, we will expand our students to surpass us. Many elders and simple priests are disciples who are saints. A sin is not a passion. Saint Maximus the Confessor says that passions cannot present themselves without their sensory causes. See, sometimes we think that, oh, we haven't sinned lately. You know, things are going well for us. Okay, we're not sinning at this point, and we sin constantly because, you know, we have sins of the mind. We have all kinds of sin, unknown sins. But we, you know, and this is also the experience of the devil, to not let us have any carnal thoughts for a few months, to let us think that, oh, we are progressing, we're doing well. When he sees that he's not getting to us, he will let the fight, he will pull the fight away. He will let us go for a few months. And then we think, oh, you know, I love everybody. You know, I have no resentment in my heart. You know, I'm at the level of apatia, you know. What a delusion. St. Maximus says that passions cannot present themselves without the sensory causes. Right now, you know, we can feel that, you know, we're just full of Christ's love, because everybody here is very nice to us. And then a person walks in that we had a terrible relationship for many, many years, and we see them, and all of a sudden, what happens inside of us? This tightness. All of a sudden we feel, and this shows that we're not cured yet. We're not cured yet. We have ways to go. And St. Maximus the Confessor says, without the presence of a woman, you know, the passion of fornication is rather asleep. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's just dormant. So many passions are hidden in our souls, and they surface when the stimuli or the causes appear. And the ascetics went to the desert not to avoid the causes of the passion. You know, they don't go because they're afraid of being around women. No, they go there to undo the passion itself. They go there to eradicate the passion. And as we know, we don't really get rid of our passions. We take that energy and we redirect it. You know, this energy of the soul that became unnatural because of the fall, now we redirect it. And pride, we will redirect. We'll take this energy of lust, which is a sinful energy, will take it and turn it towards love of God, eros, towards God and towards His church. So sins are erased very easily. We go to confession, sins are erased. They're forgiven. But the passions do not go away that easily. They're still there. So we can have some passions that are still lurking there, even though the sins are forgiven. And each passion is represented by a corresponding demon. You may have heard this. A passion is not a demon. That's not the case. The passion is initiated by men. So let's not always blame the devil. The devil made me do it. That's not the case. Out of the three enemies, the first enemy is ourself. our Adamic nature, our fallen nature. The first enemy is ourself, the second is the world, and the third is the devil. Just like this monk who succumbed to the passion of gluttony. And he went in his cell, he found an egg in the chicken shack, and after hours he began to put it on a spoon and put a candle underneath. And the elder comes in, and the monk says, "Oh, elder, I'm sorry, the devil made me do it." And the devil appeared next and says, no, this one I learned from him." So, we can't blame the devil for everything. There's some things. Sometimes we have the ability now, especially with science. We teach the devil a thing or two sometimes, not always. So the passion is initiated by men. After the man fails to use, again, this discipline, the man who's away from the Holy Spirit, and St. Paul talks about this, talks about the three stages of spirituality, talks about psychikos anthropos, the natural man who behaves like an animal. We have to eat, and we have to, do this and that, and that's all we have. The man who lives, for this life and nothing else. And then we have the carnal man who is on a higher state, who is maybe baptized like the Corinthians. He tells them, "You are carnal." They are baptized Christians. So they're not totally, totally on the other side, but they're carnal. They still have these passions. And then we have the spiritual man who frees himself from these passions. So the passions are initiated by men. We are responsible. After the man develops the passion, then the demon comes and makes his abode in that passion. And he nestles there. And that's around the soul, if the passion pertains to the soul, or around the body, if the passion pertains to the body. So it's like this. I'm walking, and I keep my eyes, on the moon or, on the sun, and I fall, and I get hurt. I get injured. I scratch and get bruised, and now, I get infected. There's an open wound. Now, this wound is infected by some bacteria, by some germs. And the cut is not healing. So now, when I go to the doctor, he's going to give me antibiotics to destroy the microbes, to stop the infection, so the body can proceed with the healing process. So as the microbes invaded this wound that existed, in the same way, the demons come and they immigrate, gravitate to our existing passions, which they love very much. And if you will, when the angel, and one of the saints says this, if the angel sees us coming towards paradise, he's going to be looking at us to see if he finds any characteristics of Christ. If he does not see the characteristics of Christ, and he finds the characteristics of demons, then we need to go with the one we served. So in other words, for the demons to come and visit me, I gave him my consent. I opened the door all by myself. In the book of the Revelation, we read that the devil was bound for 1,000 years. These 1,000 years are the time between the first coming of Christ and the second coming of Christ. These are the 1,000 years. And how did we bound the devil? By our baptism, by the church, by following the commandments of God? And when would the devil be loosened again? When this world goes crazy and begins to follow the Antichrist. And the signs are great as to that. So we fight in the assault state, and we keep repeating this, very, very important. And, you know, someone asked the Lord, Lord, are those, one of the disciples, are those who are going to be saved, are they going to be many? Are many people going to be saved? And the Lord did not answer. He didn't give a number. He says, he just avoided that question, and he said, struggle to enter. Struggle to enter. Don't worry how many are going to be saved. That's God's work. Struggle. Agonizo iselthin. Struggle to enter. And as long as we keep up this struggle, this good fight, God is there to help us. The saints, the Virgin Mary, they are our allies in this battle. Struggle to enter, because holiness is in the struggle, in the fasting, vigil, prayer, and knowing the will of God through His church. Should we continue right away or have some questions before the final session?
We'll have lunch.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that. Okay. We can have some questions. I forgot that we have to eat. You know. Yes?
Elder Joseph had a tremendous fight with the devil of fornication for 7 years, but he never even began to be bombarded with what we're bombarded every day in the market, the dining store with all the magazines, whatever, the media. I'm just wondering how it was that, where did all that come from? He just like lived in the woods and stuff, but he had a bigger struggle. It seems, I don't know, I guess sometimes I think it seems almost impossible for a person, if you take someone who's lived such a pure life who has such a struggle, what's it going to be like somebody who's totally bombarded every day? That's going to be almost impossible. I don't know, I'm sure it is. That's not true, but I guess.
You know. God knows how much temptation we can bear. If we would have His struggles, we wouldn't last for a day. We'd be jumping off a bridge. And God knows that. You know, just like some monks went to Elder Ephrem of Katunaika, and he was talking to them, and he says, you know, my children, I have this unbearable weight. I have on my shoulders the souls of my 5 monks. You know, it's a very heavy weight for me. And some of the priests that may have 200 and 300, you know. And the one young monk who was inexperienced, he told him, Elder, 5? My elder has 200. What are you complaining about? And this thought, you know, wounded the elder. He was hurt by this. He didn't show it. And he stayed up all night praying for God to tell him if he was being lazy, if he was, you know, and God told him in the Holy Spirit, listen, the other elder, you know, has the strength to handle 200. You were given the strength to only handle 5. That's all. So God knows what kind of a cross He's going to give to every one of us. He knows how much we can handle. And He does not, we have to say, and I think you know these things, that He does not permit the devil to go one millimeter farther than he's supposed to. The devil has to get permission for anything. So God allows all this. He allowed it for Elder Joseph to make him a saint, to make him holy. Because only through his struggle, pure humility will come. Because what happens when we begin to have this experience of the light and, you know, all joy, all of a sudden, because we're still people of passions, we begin to have thoughts of pride, which is a horrible, you know, passion. And God allows this struggle. So let's not be concerned about anything that's happening out there. When we close ourselves in our room, you know, the world cannot touch us. Because God is in charge of our lives, ultimately. Yes?
Does purification of heart mean freedom from passions? Is that what that means when you say purification of heart?
Purification is close to that. I think at the state of illumination, you know, the passions begin to go. But you know, we struggle when we purify the heart. You know, we begin to, you know, eventually we will begin to silence the passions. At least they're not going to, you know, they're not going to bother. We want to be able to deal with them very well. Yes.
Well, the Greek people use the word nepsis.
Nepsis.
That's like the first talk you were talking about, where you're
watchfulness. Nepsis is the, you know, the guarding of, you know, the heart. You know, not to allow, you know, the thoughts to come in the heart. You know, they'll hit the noose. The thought will come. It's very important to realize out of this topic that even saints have thoughts and carnal thoughts. So we don't despair. Holiness is in the struggle. It's just that they see them coming, the saints, you know, they see them coming from far, and they already they lock the door. Where we open the door to the devil, oh yeah, great, you know, and we just open the door and invite him to come in when we, you know, we're not careful. Yes?
Do any of the fathers or saints talk about, you know, the mind that is constantly bombarded with conflicting thoughts from all over the place, what we might call ADD nowadays, or, you know, just kind of nonstop noise in the thoughts? I mean,
we talked about that yesterday. It's when we don't have this discipline and we are constantly debating ourselves in our mind.